lesser and uncommon. And now I'll recite the two prayers to be recited by teachers before teaching. The first is the four dharmas of Gampopa. O Dakdan Semchen Tamche Lu Ju Su Jo Warsen Ji Lap Tu So Chu Lam Du Jo Warsen Ji Lap Tu So Lam Ju Par So Warsen Ji Lap Tu So Ju Pa Yeshe Su Jo Warsen Ji Lap Tu So. I pray for blessing. May my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing. May the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing. May the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing. May confusion arise as wisdom. And then from the aspiration to excellent conduct. La yi ke dan lu dan nu ji ke ju bu da da mi yi ke nan tan jo wa kun ji dra ke ji san par tam she ke du da ki chen dan to. In the tongues of nagas, yakshas, gods, those of demons and of humans too, in the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. And finally, to engender the proper Mahayana aspiration and motivation, think to ourselves that let us begin by giving rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. So this was obviously a gigantic chunk of change, the teachings on the bardos of the Dharma. Now, we used to say Dharmata, but I notice he's just saying Dharmata, or is he, I don't know how he's saying it, but whatever, I'll just say the Dharmata, because I think that's how he's saying it.
Sanskrit is more like Dharmata.
With Dharmata is how we were saying it, but I noticed that, whatever, so just excuse me, and however it works for you, that's, you know what I'm referring to. And also the Bardo of Becoming. And for those of you who are interested, the course, you know, any questions we have about what actually delineates, you know, the lines between the various bardos. What's going to be unbelievable is that they are going to be giving these two bardo courses that are going to go into incredible depth into those. So we'll just get what we can now, but not to worry, it will become clearer. So what I thought I would do today is I just took excerpts from the text that specifically describe, sort of define the what Bardo of Dharmata is and the Bardo of Becoming. And then I just put together a meditation based on the two sets of instructions he had given for those two Bardos, and then leave time for people to really bring up any passages, because there's just some absolutely extraordinary stuff in the text. So we'll begin, if you have the book. We're going to start with on page 205, and this is in the section called When Death is Good News. So I see everyone has their books now. So we're starting on the second paragraph of 205 when it says, when we commit ourselves to living consciously. So when we commit ourselves to living consciously, we apply effort and diligence to diminishing our confusion. At the end of our lives, this same confusion dissolves without effort. In the same way that the normal processes of the body cease to function, the movements of mind subside as well. This includes our sensory perceptions, but also the subtle beliefs and concepts that shape our experience and define our identity. When all these cycles of birth and mind stop functioning, all that's left is awareness itself, the unconditioned open space of pure knowing. But this knowingness now has no object whatsoever. This is why the moment of death is held to be so special, for it provides the most precious opportunity at the utmost critical juncture between life and death with the body teetering at the very edge of existence, the absence of confusion allows for the experience of luminous emptiness. This is the same aspect of mind that is always revealed when we recognize a gap in the conditioned mind, when the clouds of confusion part and allow for an experience of non-conceptual awareness. Only now, at the time of dying, this pure awareness happens on its own, and the habits of past conditioning no longer have the force to rush in and obscure it. This happens naturally to everyone. It's as certain to happen as death itself. But without training, we cannot recognize the clear light of luminous emptiness. It is there, always there. And now skip to page 206. If our bodies, so this is the beginning of the whole paragraph, if our bodies expire while our minds rest in recognition of emptiness, then we are forever liberated. We have nothing more to learn. And luminous emptiness, the deathless realm, recognition and acceptance are one. We cannot attain unborn deathless reality until we accept death. The Bardo texts describe this as mother and child union. The air element inside our bodies dissolves into space. Space dissolves into itself, into spacious awareness. Individuated spaciousness is like the contents of an empty cup. Space exists within the cup, but does not belong to the cup. When the cup breaks, the contained space joins with the space that has no edges, that is not contained, that it is not contained. In the Bardo texts, so you'll see obviously I'm introducing thoughts about the Bardo of dying because I felt this was for me best to lead into the next stages. It helps me to remember where we are. So anyway, I'm going to go back. It says, when the cup breaks, the contained space joins with the space that has no edges, that is not contained. In the Bardo text, this cup space is called child luminosity, and boundless space is called mother luminosity. At the time of dying, with no shadow of conceptual mind left intact, child luminosity gravitates towards its mother as if coming home, and nothing can prevent this reunion. If we can maintain the recognition of the spaciousness at the time of dying, then the samsaric mind that we have now will never again appear in any form that will be perceived as confused, and it will never be perceived by the fixed, confused mind. We become enlightened, and whatever form this unfettered mind might inhabit, it will forever be liberated from confusion and karmic propensities, and will never involuntarily re-enter the wheel of samsara. And now I'm skipping down to three lines down where it says, in truth, most of us will miss this opportunity. At the moment when this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity presents itself, the pure mind will generally not recognize itself, or we will not be able to sustain the recognition. Most of us will black out as we do when falling asleep. And now skip to page 207, the first full paragraph. If luminosity is not recognized at the conclusion of physical death and we black out, then Western medical professionals will declare us dead. This differs from our view. Tibetans understand that this is an unconscious state that lasts on average from about 15 minutes to 3.5 days, occasionally much longer. We do not consider a person dead until this state has come to completion. There are various physical signs to indicate the very end of life within the body. And now, this is where we begin the description of the Bardo of Dharmata. Then, on completion of the dying process, as on completion of falling asleep, we wake up again and continue our journey through a dreamlike reality called the Bardo of Dharmata. This is another state that most of us will pass through quickly and most likely without recognition. We enter the bardo of dharmata because we have not fully died in the bardo of dying. Our bodies are gone. All conditional phenomena that appear to exist will disappear. That is their nature and the nature of our bodies. But consciousness, awareness, luminous emptiness, clarity, these aspects of reality are unborn and therefore do not die. To become unified with these aspects is to enter the deathless realm. I now skip to page 215, where there's a more fleshed out description of the Dharma, what the Dharmata is. And it says, Dharmata is sometimes called suchness or reality. Within this lifetime, the death of the small self awakens us to the suchness of this life, the things as they are, insubstantial, impermanent, and interdependent. We are reborn into reality with the death of the grasping mind. In the bardo of dharmata, we enter reality after we physically die. At the very end of dying, we pass through the experience of ultimate luminous emptiness. If we do not recognize this, then we enter the bardo of dharmata. The physical body is gone, and we continue in the form of a mental body, like the illusory body we have when we dream. The consciousness of the mental body carries with it karmic seeds. These do not merge with consciousness, but accompany it. What also goes forth is our recent experience of spacious emptiness, joining spacious emptiness. Even unrecognized, this leaves an imprint. We have just left behind our physical bodies and have soared to a peak state of absolute, formless, complete naked awareness, sky without clouds. In this state, we enter the bardo of dharmata. But the entry also initiates the reverse process, and we begin the transformation from absolute formlessness to once again inhabiting form. In the bardo of dharmata, the perception of dim shapes and pale colors indicates the first signs of form taking shape again. We have just emerged from a state of pure consciousness, and projections and concepts do not exist. Slowly, as our experience of ourself reforms, we will move forward toward a we will move toward a future flesh and blood body. If we do not wake up and choose our direction, then we will re-inhabit the conceptual mind with the same propensities that have imbued this life. So that's introducing the bardo of becoming, which will get further described on page 212. And here I start with in between. It's in the middle of the paragraph of italics. It says the mind of in between. So he's talking now that, you know, during during while we're alive, the mind of in between has been tethered. In the bardo of becoming after death, it will not have the grounding of a gross physical body. The container will be gone. All that will be left is a mental body, a form made of light that will slowly experience itself more as it was before death. The transitions of consciousness in the bardo of becoming are the same as for this life. But the texts explain that the mind released from the physical body is 7 times more sensitive than the mind that is experienced from within the body. It can see farther, hear sounds from much greater distances, traverse space unimpeded by gravity or direction. Our clarity is 7 times greater than in our ordinary lives, but so are our fearful responses. if my only response to loud noises and waves that look like monsters would be to recoil in terror, then I would be driven out of this Bardo. So at this stage, the body can no longer filter the unleashed contents of mind, and we will be returned to the wheel of samsara, where we will take rebirth in one of the realms, and the cycle of ignorance will begin anew. And at the same time, as always, so will the possibilities for waking up. But if we recognize that we are in the Bardo of becoming, then we can direct our next birth. Karma is a heavy influence here, but it is still not destiny. We are like feathers in the wind, getting tossed about, and our perceptions shift rapidly. At the same time, we are looking for our next body, a safe home to take refuge in. And waking up in our situation allows us to direct our choice. So now I'd like to lead us in a guided meditation based on Mincha Rinpoche's instructions on both when he, for those of you taking the course, I'm pulling from his formal practice instructions from practicing the Bardo of Dharmata and then practicing the Bardo of Becoming. And then after that, I have just one excerpt from the book to conclude, and then we can open it up for discussion. So I just have to find, okay, so to begin with, so here I would say just follow the instructions. You don't have to be reading with me. I'll be reading to you because I'm not going to be reading, all of it. I'm sort of excerpting it. So to begin with, as Lama Chidren sent us, from Rinpo Tuku, this wonderful instruction, which is to bring the body to the seat, mind to the body, and ease to the mind. So to begin with, let's adjust our posture and whatever we're sitting on as we can best as possible to maintain a straight spine as best as we can to support to enable our mind to come to rest as effortlessly as possible. And so the first instruction then having brought the body to the seat, the next is to bring the mind to the body. So you can do for yourself, I won't talk you through it, just the idea here again is to, starting from the head down, if you'd like, to please notice where you might be stress, tightness, in the body, and simply bring your awareness and just notice it. Allow it to be there without doing anything, but just notice it. And if you'd like, you can also just make it, by noticing it, you can let go of the stress if you want. I'm sort of confusing two sets of instructions, excuse me. So the point is just to notice where there's stress or tightness in the body. And bring your attention to it. Let go of any holding, I should say. Let go of any stickiness. And if you could, like at this point, you could actually watch your breath for a few minutes to just, or moments to, again, bring mind into body to help connect, to turn basically your awareness inwards, to anchor your awareness, as it were, just by noticing your breath. And letting go of any kinds of concerns you have, or again, any other obstacles to just resting, letting go of anything that you're clinging to conceptually, letting go of the fixed mind, just trying to, if you can, relax. Basically, to just keep relaxing and letting go. So the third instruction then, having brought the body to the seat, mind to the body, is to bring ease to the mind. So basically, you don't have to be thinking about the past or the present, past or the future. The past is finished, so it doesn't exist. The future, by definition, has not come. Just remain as best you can in the present moment of awareness. Letting go of any need to change anything, to just allow your body to be at ease and allow your mind to be simply as it is. So basically, you're letting go of doing anything. Letting go of any expectations. Of any kind of rules you might have set for yourself, conditions. Simply let go of doing anything at all. Allow whatever is arising to be just as it is. And if you find your mind drifting off again and again and again, you can simply bring your awareness back to your breath as a means to anchor it. And then when you find, if you find that your mind becomes relaxed, then remain just in that present moment of awareness. That is the point. But again, if your mind is unable to settle, you can use as a skillful means your breath to anchor it again. So now we enter into instructions for one type of formal practice, for the practice of Dharmata. And that is to imagine that you've actually entered your actual death and dying stages. You're in the bardo of dying. And so you can just imagine that, well, I'm reading a little bit from his book. It says, "We know about the retraction of the senses when falling to sleep. The five elements also dissolve night after night during sleep. But this happens so subtly that very few people can remain aware of the process. However, at the time of dying, the dissolution of the elements becomes as pronounced as the dissolution of the senses, and we can directly imagine, or directly experience, rather, the disidentification of form from consciousness." So again, we're just resting in awareness, and you're just listening to the sounds of the words, and we're just imagining here. We don't have to worry about whether we've experienced any of this. We're just being introduced to ideas, planting a seed. So again, you're just relaxedly listening. You're hearing, but you don't have to do anything. The earth element relates to flesh and bones, the densest part of our bodies. When we die, the earth element dissolves into the water element. Our strength visibly weakens, and we experience often the sensation of falling or sinking. The water element relates to our bodily fluids. When the water element dissolves into the fire element at the time of dying, the inner experience feels like floating, and we feel thirsty. The body dries out, the blood slows until it stops, the lips become noticeably parched, and the skin feels dry, and the mucus congeals. When the fire element dissolves into air or wind at the time of dying, we cannot retain heat. The extremities turn cold, although the heart continues to stay warm, and the mind feels like it's burning. Inhaling air or wind keeps everything in motion. As the air element dissolves, breathing becomes labored. Space is the foundational reality of all phenomena, including our bodies. Without space, we cannot have the other elements. Space dissolves into itself, into consciousness or awareness. And now Bardo Ninja Rinpoche says, when you wake up, so again, you've probably not recognized this. As he said, most people won't recognize this moment of the meeting of mother and child luminosities. And so we black out, literally. And then it says, when you wake up, so if anyone wants to know, this is page 3 of his teaching on the practicing the Bardo of Dharmata handout. It says, so when you wake up, you're in the Bardo of Dharmata. Now you do not have the physical body anymore. Instead, you have what we call a mental body. The mental body and the dream body are very similar, of a similar type. Then the important thing is that you have to recognize that you are in the Bardo, in that Bardo. Then if you meditate while resting in awareness, suddenly you can recognize awareness very clearly and profoundly. Then the cycle of the fixed mind, normal, conceptual, dualistic mind breaks. This is what we call enlightenment. At that moment, you achieve enlightenment. So again, let's take a moment to simply let go. Just rest in the newness of just rest now in the present moment, at ease as it is. Let go of doing, just be. If you do not recognize this moment, then slowly form, and then arises what we call the heart manifestation, where there is a lot of light and a lot of perceptions which are connected to the heart and are peaceful and compassionate. Then the head manifestation with a lot of things like blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. It is wrathful with a lot of images. This is the head manifestation. Then in the end, you will enter the third state. Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, what we call the practice of the Bardo of becoming. So the point here, sorry, I got a little flustered. So when he's talking about the peaceful perceptions of light, in the heart, that would be the peaceful deities, and if the head are the wrathful. So this is actually taking place during the Bardo of the Dharmata. And then it's saying that in the end, you will enter the third state, what we call the Bardo of becoming. So now back to the practice of the Bardo of Dharmata. It says, the practice is to imagine that we are in that state, just like the dream state. When you recognize you are dreaming, you are free from the dream laws. So when you recognize you are in the Bardo and rest your mind in awareness and imagine that suddenly you fully recognize your true nature, and whatever you see is the manifestation of your own mind, your own perception. Imagine that you are fully awake. So again, just let go of doing and just be. Then you realize that whatever you see right now is just like a dream, just like in the Bardo of Dharmata. Then when you see that everything is like a dream, the fixed mind is no longer there. There is really a big gap in our minds. That does not mean that when we are in the gap beyond concepts, that everything is unclear, that we do not know who we are, or we do not know who you are. It's not like that. When you recognize your dream, the dream is still there, very clearly and vividly. So when we recognize we are in the Bardo, everything is clear, yet there is no grasping. And right now, when you imagine that everything is like a dream, you still see things very clearly, alive. Everything is fresh and alive. It is more alive than usual. Usually with the fixed mind, everything is solid. Everything becomes so tight and narrow. When you see everything as illusory, then there is more lucidity, transparency, freshness, and liveliness. Try to practice like this. And now to continue our meditation, we're now going to work with the Bardo of Becoming. So for those who are interested, I'm on page 2 of his instructions of the practice of the Bardo of Becoming at the bottom of the page. Now in the Bardo of Becoming, you may still recognize that you are in the Bardo of Becoming. During the second stage of the Bardo of Dharmata, your body, along with everything, is not so solid. But now, in the Bardo of Becoming, your body becomes more solid. All the senses are very clear. And then we say that if you know that you are dead, and you talk to your friends and family, and they do not answer you, at that time, you have to recognize that I am in the Bardo of Becoming. So now you have a choice. You can choose to be reborn as something nice. You can choose the pure land by just thinking that I want to go to this pure land. I am in this pure land. I have this body of the pure land, environment, everything. Whatever you want to imagine, you can imagine. On the imagination level, you can imagine anything. Normally, we cannot imagine. We cannot feel genuine love, wisdom, and compassion. But on the imagination level, you can imagine that you have those qualities. You can imagine that all these qualities, awareness, love, and compassion, are not just intellectual. With experience, they will come into your body. You are just being. Your body, your mind, everything transforms with the experience of awareness, compassion, love, and wisdom. Whatever you see is the pure land, the land of joy, the land of spaciousness, openness, the land without a fixed mind. Not having a fixed mind is what we call being free from suffering. So again, let's take a break and just let go of grasping, of fixation, that whatever arises is like a breeze passing through, and that you don't have to cling to it or follow after it. You notice it's there, but you can just let go. You don't have to change anything. You don't have to do anything at all. You can just rest in the present moment, at ease, as it is, without doing anything at all. Just be. You could imagine that you're being born into this pure realm. It's just a state of mind, really, as Campbell Soljan, this pure land is this land of joy, of spaciousness, openness, a land without a fixed mind. So it's not describing anything in particular. It's merely the recognition of pure awareness, bare awareness, which is inseparable from infinite love, kindness, compassion. And you can think, I will now continue to benefit others. I am reborn in this pure realm. I want to benefit others. Whatever my capabilities, wisdom, and skills are, I want to benefit all beings. You can imagine like that. That is the practice of the bardo of becoming. Then at the end of that, when you have imagined, you can rest into awareness, just rest as it is. And now I'll finish up just with, that ends the formal meditation. And now I just wanted to end with a concluding excerpt back in the book on page 245 in the book. Where it says the biggest challenge. And it says the biggest challenge to accepting the constancy of death and rebirth lies within our resistance to impermanence and our hopeless attempts to hold in place what inherently changes. We often express the wish to let go of such disturbing emotions as jealousy, anger, or pride, or to transcend our vanity or laziness. When we think of making changes, our minds often jump to these conspicuous examples. And after decades of repetition, these traits seem immutable, undefeatable, and we lack the confidence to undertake the work of letting them go. The good news is that letting go is itself a way of experiencing change, death, and rebirth. And to affirm this, we don't need to start with our most entrenched and problematic tendencies. We can experiment with everyday activities that we generally do not define as problems at all. Within the dualistic perception of normal awareness, we can acknowledge that each night when we fall asleep, we're dying to this day, which allows us to take rebirth tomorrow. In ordinary experience, every moment takes place when the previous moment dies. Every new breath follows the death of the previous breath. In between breaths, in between thoughts, days, events, in between everything, there are gaps. And each gap offers the possibility of glimpsing pure emptiness. The bardo principle Continuous death and rebirth can be recognized right now in the midst of our ordinary neurotic patterns and dissatisfactions and anguish. The view of who we are is transformed through awareness, and this changes everything. Once we accept the fundamental transitory nature of our minds and bodies, then we can develop the confidence to dismantle our most entrenched patterns. Peeling off the outer layers of self is a form of dying, but the process becomes much more workable if we can develop confidence in the benefits of rebirth in this lifetime. Each time we engage in recognizing the many deaths of our daily lives, we become more familiar with the big death that will come with the end of our bodies. We can use every big and small experience of letting go to become more comfortable with the final dissolution of the body. Doing this reduces the fear of future death and therefore transforms the way we live in the present. So that's where I end my presentation. And I felt that I didn't want to introduce any of my own thoughts at any point because clearly this is Mingyur Rinpoche's teaching. And I have my own, you know, thoughts that come up, but I thought that that could come up during our discussion where everybody could bring up what they thought, you know, what they wanted to say, or if there are any passages that were particularly meaningful to them. I did have one passage that I wanted to share that, and then I'm going to open the floor, as it were, that I thought was really unbelievable in terms of really understanding. Where is it? Maybe 215. I have 215 in my mind. No. Oh, it's, I'm so sorry, I'll find it, but it's got to do with, it came up, I brought it up during the webinar, so you've heard already if you listen to the webinar, but it had to do with the meaning of the illusory body in this lifetime and what that meant, the transformation of seeing your own body as a flesh and blood body to seeing it as like a illusory form. But anyway, so is there anyone who'd like to speak or start with comments? So John?
Yeah, so let's see, when you describe, or when you were describing in this passage we just did, when we realize that we're trying to communicate with our loved ones, that that's the state of the bardo of becoming. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to be 49. No one's sitting around for 49 days. So I was confused there.
So this is a very important point that came up in my second retreat. Someone asked the question because they're talking about time. And time is all relative. You know, time is only as you know it. And we keep hearing all this time about, you know, a God's realm is like 2 zillion, like, you know, earthling, you know, of human years, etc. And that from their point of view, who knows what time is? You know, I mean, what is their sense of time? So it takes it out of the realm of anything conventional from our point of view. And that's why it's interesting that it does come up where he says that the moment of the Dharmata could last for, you know, 15 or was it that part of the part of dying? I this is where the transitions get a little funky to me, but you know, it could last for seconds. It could last 3.5 days. I mean, I'll be frank with you, in most cases when Rinpoche, you know, when we've had memorial services, here at the monastery when Lama Norla Rinpoche was still alive. And people would come and speak. And Rinpoche often would say, you know, thinking that they still might be around and like there's a tradition to not mention their names because that might bring the Bardo being closer to them. But Rinpoche would often say they're already gone. You know, so this notion of there being an actual time frame, it's just like when you sleep. It's like the whole appearance of the wrathful, the peaceful and wrathful deities as described, you know, in the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It's like you might be so deep in confusion that we don't even recognize our dreams. You might miss that whole section completely. And just like you sleep, whether you think you're asleep for 10 minutes or you're asleep actually for 8 hours, who knows? So it's important not to get to not get in any way attached to notions of time as described, because everyone's different and it's completely relative. Yeah. That's what Lama Norla Rinpoche was saying.
Yeah, that answers it nicely. Thank you.
I found the section that I just wanted to share with you that I thought, because, you know, it's on page 192, the top paragraph. And I find I guess it's a question I've had, because this is like, we look at bodies of what we consider enlightened beings or highly realized beings, and we're like, they seem to be experiencing illness and death and all of this. But it says, 192, top paragraph, the recognition of luminosity is the experience of dying before we die, dying within the bardo of this life. When this happens, the flesh, and so this is for someone who realizes this state of mind while in the bardo of this life. When this happens, the flesh and blood body no longer functions as the filter or ordinary to the ordinary observer. For an awakened mind, the body has become what we call an illusory body. It is no longer real in any conventional sense, but exists to an awakened mind much as a reflection, like a hologram. In this state, although other people will perceive a life that is ending, one who has woken up to their own deathless emptiness will not experience dying as a final ending, only as a transition. And I've been doing this a lot down in Florida. Again, sorry if you've heard the webinar, I tried to bring this up, but because I was saying that this whole notion of seeing your body as a reflection, as seeing form as a hologram, this notion that even though it doesn't exist truly, it still appears. So that's this whole idea that you recognize a dream, but it's not like everything then dissolves. You're still seeing everything. But what does that mean to actually know that it's empty? And we have that with a rainbow, you see clearly, because we so have ingrained that the whole definition of a rainbow is transient and permanent, you know, emptiness, conditions coming together. So when I was down in Florida, I would go in the pool, and my dad has these like noodles, these long styrofoam things that you can float with. And I noticed that as the long blue noodle was resting on top of the water, you get a reflection underneath that looks three-dimensional, seems to be appearing underneath it, but I could stick my hand right through it. I would still see it, but I could stick my hand right through it. And then I also noticed that wouldn't affect change, that what it was even more illusory was that the reflection was underneath it. In fact, the reflection is on the surface of water. And the only way that I would affect change in what I was seeing was to ripple the top of the water. So there's completely fabricated by, you know, our interpretation of the mind. And Dave sent, you know, those pictures of what it looks like, you know, what the, you know, we're just basically seeing its light and energy, and then we're interpreting this. And so I had this idea that, you know, basically I would do an art piece if I was back 30, 60 years, whenever ago at art school, you know, that I'd have a thing of water, like that thing. And I would have, and then be titled Waking, you know, Waking state, and that reflection of the noodle underneath would be really, and I would try to say to myself, okay, I'm going to recognize I'm dreaming, and the dream really is illusory, just like that noodle, that reflection, because in my dream, I'm going to stick my finger through things, and that will prove that even though I see them, they're not actually there. Well, it you know, I'm trying, you know, but still, that was my experience. It's just so incredible. I am, I guess we all are, keeping that it's real, it's solid, you know, that it isn't, and yet it's, you know, totally dependent on conditions and totally an interpretation happening with awareness, you know. It's, anyway, that was my little thing. So if anyone else wants to share anything or has thoughts.
Oh,
Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you're muted again. Okay, now you're unmuted.
I was going to say, that's an awe. Like, I heard that in the webinar, and that was really tremendous. And also Tim Olmsted's response about, you know, rainbows being, like, by definition, illusory, and yet we can, you know, like a child would take that as real, we take this as real. The other thing about, like, I was thinking about the reflection, like how you say, you know, you see this, the noodle, and then you see the reflection, and it looks like it's lower, right? So you're actually seeing, you know you're seeing that, you're perceiving it as three dimensions in that reflection. Well, that's also like, like a shadow is three dimensions into two dimensions. So like kind of like the holographic look at us is also like four dimensions going into three dimensions, and the three dimensions is the shadow of a higher number of dimensions.
But you
anyway,
know,
another
even
way
if you,
to trip your
yeah.
mind out.
Well, the thing is, even if you say all of that, those are still words. The fact is, it's like, I actually go to like Google and look up holograms, because it's like, or go to a window at night and look out the window, and you see the reflection of what's inside, and you immediately think it's there. Even if you think it's there as a reflection, you think it's, I think it's there to even get this head, my head around the fact that it's a reflection, unless I see it shimmering like I did in the water, like, because the rainbow's far away, it's faint. You can see what's behind it, because you see a rainbow, you're already seeing through the rainbow. So it's just that. And so that's what Tim was saying, that is the practice. And I guess so that for me, the practice of these later stage bardos is like, if I can't in my waking state get closer to letting go of fixation, you know, that's really the practice of letting go for me of fixation, you know, a fixated mind. And that's the way we're continuously dying every moment. And that in meditation, like he says, you're letting go of the fixated to just again. Anyway.
Another thing about the Mingyur Rinpoche and the reflection idea, when he was teaching the like the teachings on just general meditation and POA stuff in San Jose earlier in the year, he had this example where he was talking about awareness, and you know, similar. He didn't go into it directly, but like the mother and child's luminosity and like that awareness. He had this interesting discussion about awareness and where it fits in relation to like our awareness and the Buddha's awareness and enlightenment versus just this, you know, little awareness. And he talked about it as reflection and the moon and like the teachings being along stages of that. Like first you see, you know the concept of the moon is there. Then you're allowed to see a reflection, you know, and this is like the depth of your teachings, like whether you're doing, you know, initial teachings, more open awareness than more mob or whatever. But he was saying like, then we get to you know, you see in the reflection in the moon, of the moon in the water, it's very clear. You can start to see all the details, but it's still not there. Mm. And then that's like your own little awareness while you're meditating. And then when you kind of get somewhere and you can look directly at it, that's when you're like at the Buddha, you know, with the Buddha's awareness. So
that's actually, it's actually in the epilogue of this book is his description of the moons as well. So that's another source.
That's it for me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I would say if not, we have about 14 minutes. Oh no, I have it at 3:11. I know that she was talking about leaving some space at the end to have a discussion about, from those of you who saw Ringo Toku teach. Valerie has. Valerie?
I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you.
Sorry.
Is it just me? Am I the only one?
Oh no, I don't know why. Why is that?
Well, now you're good, but then you'll go out and I won't hear you. And
you know, I don't know. And it hasn't come up that I have a bad, unless I was just talking soft.
No,
it's you're dropping out. John, do you have any insight into this? I wasn't able to unmute you.
Just that screen popped up on my monitor. It said that her connection was having low bandwidth issues.
Yeah.
Oh, so, and see, yeah. Usually that would come up on mine, but it didn't come up on mine at all. Usually it would. And I'm on KTC private.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. Again, if it had popped up on mine, I would have said hello. So until you sent me, Lama Chidren actually sent me a thing about. So I hope that wasn't too disruptive during today.
No, it was just a few words here and there. So I think that's why we didn't make an issue of it before, but we did lose a few words here and there.
Oh, sorry.
It's the, you know, mysteries of the internet.
Yeah, I guess so, because...
I get the same thing sometimes, and there's no, like, known reason for why suddenly there's not enough bandwidth. We have really good wireless in my house, and we don't know why.
We have really good wireless here, and we have like business. But anyway, sorry about that. I hope that it wasn't too.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning it, though, Valerie. Everybody probably thought it was just them.
Sorry. Well, there you go. You had gaps to work with.
Yes, we had gaps. We did. And we were struggling mightily to make the gaps solid.
To join them instead of relaxing with them.
Turn that into something that we can conceptualize. What was that, Dave?
Yeah, he's grasping.
You had a nice gesture. Yeah, we were grasping.
I was also thinking like I had the webinar, I was trying to, like, I missed that entire webinar when, you know, the last webinar, like I literally maybe got a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. I heard Lama Jinzong, like, oh, she's asking a question, then didn't hear like all of it. Then I heard a little bit more, and, you know, and I was like hoping, well, I hope it's in the recording, but then I'm also like, well, this is clearly my karma to be trying to receive, to hear this and only not hear this. So it's like, am I going to get mad? Am I, you know, that seems kind of stupid, you know, but it's like so interesting to see like, okay, my karma is not to hear this now, but then it's on the recording. So I guess, okay, my karma is to hear that then.
Well, it's that struggling to be in control of that, which is uncontrollable. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we're in the present moment, then we just accept that the present moment is not conceptually intelligible.
Yeah. Right. And you know what? If we're really bummed out in now, what's it going to be like in the Bardo where everything's like seven times more, you know?
It will be like that. We're going to be trying to get people to talk to us and hear us. No one can hear anybody. You're freezing.
Way it's actually good prep, you know, it's like, so now you get used to it, like, it's okay, I can't really hear it. Oh, well, bye guys, I'm away now.
So I guess now we have 15 minutes left. So I didn't know if John, if you wanted to enthrall us with tales of your visit to Taisetsu Rinpoche, or if the Ringo Toku folks wanted to talk about their visit with Ringo Toku.
Let's go with John if he's ready.
Okay.
We'll have a chance next week. If there's no time today, then we'll talk about it next week. Maybe Kathy will be here too.
Okay. I don't know if I actually have any pearls of wisdom for you all or any insights, but I did.
Just tell us what you did, actually. I didn't even know you went.
Oh, well, I went to Sherbling, and the topic of Taisetsu's teaching was Buddhism for busy people. And since there wasn't any particular writing on this topic, I was impressed by how much research that he had done. He said that he went through 230 different texts, and each text had like 103 volumes. And I mean, it was just an enormous amount of things that he went through to pull out certain, things for us from the Buddhist, Buddhist teachings. So that was impressive. Let's see. Some of the notes I made was, first, all the obstacles that I've had, and there was many, in getting the thing planned and getting everything lined up. And it was just almost to the point where I was comical. It was like, now what? I was just looking for, all right, what's next? Bring it on. Let's see what happens. But it all worked out and didn't stress much about it. There was times when I thought, another thing happening. All right, fine. I just deal with it. And it's just like, if I don't think and worry about it, it's not a problem. So I was able to see those, specifically. Another time that I had the time to think about was on the plane. And I was thinking, all right, how is my mind still following me? I'm halfway across the planet and traveling. And my mind is keeping pace. I'm going 600 miles an hour, and it's still with me. But then I thought, well, how is that different from being in a car or walking or anything else? Somehow it's tethered to this body. And basically, I think I came to the conclusion that it's beyond me to intellectually know this. So, and just move on from that. Another thing was about Bardo's, and because each plane connection I made was another Bardo. I'm going through the Bardo from Virginia to New Jersey, then from New Jersey to Mumbai, and then Mumbai to Delhi, and then ultimately I moved from the Bardo of of life in Virginia to becoming the life in India. So it was like one big, a lot of little Bardos on to the end one. But it was a nice trip. I enjoyed it.
Where did you stay while you were there? Stay at the
monastery, yeah.
At the guest. How many people were in at the event?
They keep it up down to 50. They don't go over that, so the most we would have had was 50, and I didn't count, so.
Oh, I just want to interject, John, that John emailed me that Ani Rinchen was there.
Oh, you're talking to me.
Yeah, Rinchen. Yeah. For anybody who knows Rinchen, Elizabeth.
From Canada.
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh. John, can you give us any tips from Sita Rinpoche's teaching? Anything stick in your mind particularly?
Well, the one thing that did stick in my mind, and I was hoping I could listen to the audio again, but the one thing that did stick in my mind was that he said, it's because of the senses that we know there's a body. So if we didn't have any sensory input, there's no body to know about. And then I think the next thing he said, and I'm hoping I got it right, was that it's because because of the body that we know, that we have a mind, or that we know the mind. So something along those lines, and it seemed, well, that's what, I mean, I kind of remembered that out of everything.
But, Marilyn, I'm unmuting you.
I think people might not know that you went as part of the annual, I think it's annual, Hay House.
Right.
Fanny has been on that too.
What is that?
That's John is going to have to say. Yeah.
So Hay House Publishing Company, they have a relationship with Taisitu and the monastery, and they put on a teaching once a year. You know, they sponsor it, and, you know, Rinpoche accepts it, and then we move on, and they, you know, put out the invitation, and I was fortunate enough to get to go this time. It was my fourth attempt, and finally, through a lot of aspirations each year of not doing it, that it finally happened. And I did get to have an interview with him, and I had thought previously that it was going to be, I don't know, not stiff, but like someone that I just don't know, you know, and, you know, that kind of relationship. And it wasn't, you know, because most other interviews I have are with other lamas that I kind of know or have known for a while. So it's more relaxed and, you know, more personal. But this interview went very relaxed, and it was open. I found out he lived for a while in Front Royal in Virginia over here. You know, we had a nice little discussion. So it was like, wow. It was nice to do, you know, it was just nice doing that.
Their connection with him, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that connection, when he becomes Buddha in 2 million years, I'll hopefully be there.
Well, it also speaks well. I mean, he is now the head. We are now under the Paupong. We are a Paupong monastery, and we are now the actual seat of Taisitu Rinpoche. If he comes to the States, he said this would, Dipten Choling would be his seat. So it's really an extraordinary blessing we have to have, you know, Taisitu Rinpoche over, you know, overseeing us, you know, taking care. And the to me, the foresight of Lama Noyla Rinpoche and his choice to offer, you know, the monastery to Taisitu Rinpoche so many years ago. So it's talk about lineage. It's a wonderful lineage to be part of, isn't it?
Anything further, John, or is that your report for today? Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything fine. In particular strike you about India? Like, you know, any particular things stand out as that bardo being different from this bardo?
I guess I could say it. I'm amongst friends. But let's just put it that this way, that I was so happy to be home and use a toilet.
Yeah, a few other people here, not me, have been to India before.
Oh, God. I'm always amazed by the road systems. I'm always like, we're driving, even to this day, sometimes I'll be on the road and I'm going, oh, it's so nice. Everyone's in their lane. They're like in India, they don't even have side view mirrors on their cars. They're just going forward, you know, and everyone's just like, it's just unbelievable. So I'm always like, ah, organization, you know, some semblance of, you know,
It's like there's no rules on the road. It's like, and I had to ask, I'm like, but that gave me insight as to, you know, when I did get on the road, and I'm like, this is crazy. We got cars going every which way, horns beeping, buses, bikes, motorcycles, and people walking across the street. Why? You know, but, and it was like just driving with your peripheral vision, trying not to hit something. And it was just crazy. But it gave me insight as to why the people were walking. You know, people that I was, you know, in the airport, they walk just like that driving. It's like they'll cut in front of you. They don't look. It's just like that. Yeah. I'm standing at the counter. Someone will knock me over to get there. And it's like, so it's basically the most aggressive person wins. But yes, but it gave me insight from the driving as to why people like it's the culture. So
well, then, what wonderful preparation for the bardo.
Okay.
The bardo is after death.
Yeah. Okay. There'll be no queuing up in the bardo, that's for sure. Oh, now I finally got a thing that says your internet connection is unstable. Okay. Finally, I get told. Yeah.
So we just have a couple of minutes left. Did you have anything else, Lama Jinsung, or should we talk a little bit about next week?
Yeah, let's
and
talk.
The future.
You know, again, this I figured this was not, you know, this is way above my pay grade. You know what I'm saying?
What is?
But, you know, discussion of this.
Oh,
of
I thought anymore. You did a fabulous job. It was a wonderful class today.
Oh,
the meditation was really, really good. The whole sequence was really great. And then we got to finish off with John's report on his trip.
His bardos.
If every class could be like this.
Anyway, no, I have nothing. I've completed my...
Okay, well, thank you so much. Excellent preparation and follow through. So next week we're going to do the same thing. Oh, I'm not sure if it'll be as smooth, but we're going to wrap up Ornament of Precious Liberation. So I highly recommend that everyone do the reading if they can. Reading of the ornament is optional if you could just read Ringu Tulku, and I encourage everybody to read Ornament as well if they can, if they feel like it and have the time. But if you read the Ringu Tulku, we're going to talk about Buddhahood. We're going to have a little preparation for when we actually become fully realized Buddhas, that little preview beyond all bardos. So I sent out
better.
An email. I think I sent an email yesterday and said what the reading was. It's pretty obvious anyway, if you just look at the books.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the result and...
Results and activity.
So that starts on pages 149, and then he has a little conclusion.
Yeah, read the conclusion at the end, his parting advice.
So it's 21 pages of this.
Yeah, it's not too much.
No.
Yeah, so we'll do that next week. And then, so next week is our regular time frame, 2 o'clock to 3:30. And we'll also, those of us who saw Ringu Tulku on his, you know, his East Coast trip last week, we'll give our report on that. We'll, you know, we have all the Western comforts. We didn't have to give up any of those, but we'll report on our experience. Hopefully Kathy will be here too. And then we have the rest of November off from these classes. We won't meet the rest of November after next week. So that's 3 weeks we won't meet, including Thanksgiving week or including Thanksgiving Day. But then we'll resume again in December. I don't know how much we'll meet in December. I think just once or twice. But the course, the Bardo course, will be ongoing. We don't even know the name of the Bardo course yet. They haven't posted anything. But we do know the books. There may be other books, because when I checked in with Tim, when the dates changed, I checked, and it seemed like the structure had changed, I checked in with Tim to make sure the books were the same ones I'd been encouraging people to get. And he said the core reading has not changed. So that suggests to me there could be some other optional reading, but we'll find out when they post something.
I think there is something posted. I'm just going online
now. There wasn't
now.
Yesterday. Maybe there is today.
It's called Awakening in Daily Life. They've just posted it. Learn Mode. It says it just starts December 1st. And it says, they've even given you a course modules. It says the module December 1st through 31st. That's the month. I guess because of holidays, Welcome and Introduction to the Bardos, Module 2, January 1st to February 15th. Wow, the Bardo of Living. Module 3, February 16th to March 15th, the Bardo of Sleep and Dream. And March 15th to April 15th, the Bardo of Meditation. So the course runs from December 1st to April 15.
Right. And that's the that's the first course that's on the Bardos of this life, the three Bardos of this life. And then apparently there's a follow-up course after that on the Bardos of death. Well, that's great. That's the second time that's happened to me today. Did people know Kenny Howerton? They had their baby.
Oh.
Their baby was born on Tuesday. I had just sent out something to the local Sangha because he was part of our local Sangha saying that any day now. And it turned out that while I was sending that email, Mariana posted on Facebook pictures of baby Sebastian. So,
wow, Sebastian. Yeah. Wow, that's a pretty
good one. Do people want me to send you that? Or if you're on Facebook, you can look it up. Anyway. Oh, sorry, Marilyn, I'm unmuting you. Yeah.
Do we have a start? Have you firmed up when in December we're going to meet, or is that still?
No, I mean, we can look it up right this minute, because I would think it's like the first Thursday.
Okay, that's the 5th.
Okay, I think December 5th is fine with me. So we have the 5th and the 12th, maybe. Let's leave it at 5th and the 12th for now. Does that work for everybody, mm-hmm. more or less? And then we'll have the holidays. The course will be ongoing, so we can decide on the 12th if we want to meet again in December. But again, it's independent study. So, and what we're going to do after November 7th is switch to probably, I mean, we'll see how it goes. We can go back to an hour and a half if we feel like we need to, because we could do meditation together. But we're designating an hour for those two meetings, December 5th and 12th. And it's just the welcome. That's just going to be within the welcome module, I guess. So
yeah, that's
pretty
what
light,
appears.
I think. Anyway, we'll figure out the schedule going forward. But what Lama Jinsong and I have discussed is just making it an hour, and it'll be more of a discussion group because we're not teaching a class; we're doing the classwork on our own, all of us, and then we just get together and talk about it. So, is everybody planning to take that course?
Hey.
Great.
What should we call ourselves? I want to put it down. Are we still OPL?
Oh, OPL. Or? Well, okay, I don't know.
We'll be OPL for now.
We can think about that. Yeah, OPL for now. I'm not sure what we should call it. Thursday. the Thursday group.
Thursday Sangha.
Thursday Cyber Sangha.
Okay. Oh, Cyber Sangha. Wow.
How about the Bardo Knot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Bardo Knots. That's good.
That's good. So it's...
I guess we could drop OPL now, although it will always be part of us.
Yeah, but I don't want to say the Bardo Sangha because that comes out as BS. So
sorry.
Okay. Hopefully the quality of comments will transcend that name. All right, anybody have any other questions or comments before we... Oh, excuse me, I got a cough coming. Before we go.
They okay. actually, just so you know, they don't actually include the book names. They don't have a page yet up, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Tim assured me that those are still the two books. Does everybody have them yet? Mind Beyond Death by Punlop Rinpoche and Natural Liberation. Natural Liberation is going to be the moonbeams. It's the more technical Padmasambhava text. All right. Well, I guess that's it then. I guess we can say, we'll see
dedicate.
You next week.
Wait, well, we'll dedicate.
Oh, we got to do our dedication. Yes, yes. Oh, that's what you were doing, Marilyn. I can be slow.
Okay.
All right, I got to re-mute everybody. Make sure it is muted.
Well, I don't know. I hope I'm not muted, given that
I have
the poor connection.
To unmute you, but it would be a train wreck if anybody else was unmuted. I have to mute.
No, I just mean that, hopefully I have the bandwidth to come through. Okay, we'll dedicate the merit. Actually, what I believe Lama Chodron introduced was the idea of just sitting for a few moments and just coming back into the body the mind into the body and the mind, ease to the mind. This merit may it win, omniscience defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from the ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kunti, Zampo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies, that merit and wisdom emanate, the blessings of the Buddhakayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. Thank you, everyone. See you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Mama, thank you.
Hope
Mama
you feel better soon, Lama Chijin.
Yeah.
You're muted.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess because I had to unmute myself separately. Anyway, yes, I'm feeling a bit better and on the road to recovery. So okay. See you next week.
Okay, bye everyone.
Goodbye.